case for argument, Harris versus Ashcroft. Ms. Stewart.
Good morning, Your Honors. I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Your Honors, the district court in this case erred in granting summary judgment for the Drug Enforcement Agency. The court erred in confusing a hostile work environment claim with the constructive discharge claims in this Title VII case. Elaine Harris, an African-American woman, was constructively discharged from her position, not from the agency, but from the position of resident agent in charge at the defendant's Merrillville, Indiana office on January 24, 1997. She alleged in her informal complaint and in court that she had been discriminated against because of race, sex, and retaliation by Joseph Vanacora, the special agent in charge in the DEA's Chicago office. The district court failed to mention Vanacora as a primary discriminating official. This was one discrete action, Your Honors. Harris never argued that she was coerced into resigning her position because of a hostile work environment. The standard of proof is adverse action, removal of significant amounts of her duties. In this case, all of her duties were removed. Harris
but
was on.
Didn't she admit in this litigation? I want to focus for a moment on the need for the outside evaluator before she could be restored to full duty, because we'll assume that her private physician had cleared her. But she admitted that in those cases where an agent is returning from psychiatric leave, the case is referred to an outside contractor who reviews the case and issues his own report to the medical services unit. If that was a policy, and if she admitted it was, and there was never any go-ahead from the outside contractor, how can we say that anything that happened amounted to a constructive discharge?
Well, the district court, Your Honor, held that there was a regulation that required such an outside evaluator.
What difference does it make, though, if she's agreed that this has to be done, and it strikes me, to be honest, as a not unreasonable possibility of a policy if somebody is in the law enforcement field, whatever branch of the law enforcement field it may be, before you restore that person to full responsibilities and the ability to carry weapons and so on, you want to make sure they're better.
You are correct, Your Honor. It doesn't make any difference whether there was a regulation or not. The fact is, the agency never sent Ms. Harris's medical records to any outside evaluator. There was no record of any such referral. There was no report ever sent into the agency. We asked specifically in interrogatories for the names of all individuals or agencies, inside or outside, to which Ms. Harris's medical records had been sent. The name of an outside physician was missing from the answers. So if there was a practice, if there was a policy, whether there was a regulation or not, it never happened. And there were months where this could have happened. Harris was told by her supervisors that she was not cleared to return to full duty when in fact she was. Her private physician, Dr. Levin, cleared her unconditionally to return.
But that might not be enough. I mean, and then the question is, why did she give up on the process? It seems like she was in the middle of filling out the workers' compensation claims, and she comes to a conclusion that there's no future for her anymore, and so she resigns, right?
Well, that's a separate constructive discharge from the agency. There are two constructive discharges in this case, one from her position, and one from the agency where she was sent a completely filled out.
The first one's not a constructive discharge. It might be a constructive demotion or some such thing, but a constructive discharge means you're fired.
Well, she was removed from her position. She was certainly removed from all duties. Now, the fact that she was placed on light duty does not mean that she had to be removed from all of her duties. because the only thing that the agency's own chief medical officer asked was, has her physician cleared her to carry a gun and to engage in aggressive law enforcement? Now, in her position as the resident agent in charge, she did not need to carry a gun or engage in aggressive law enforcement. So there was no reason to remove her from all of her duties without any rational alternatives. Now, the agency says that there were alternatives. Mrs. Harris denies that. There is nothing to substantiate it one way or the other except for the affidavits of the individual. So that creates a classic jury question as to whether or not she was given alternatives.
Are there regulations about the qualifications of resident agents in charge?
There are regulations about almost
I'm sure the regulations everything. About everything. But what I'm wondering is whether the resident agent in charge is a matter of at least the books needs to have the same qualifications as the agents in the field. In other words, to be able to carry a gun and to...
Oh, yes, certainly. She possesses all of those qualifications. She, in fact,
but
was...
She hadn't been cleared to carry the gun again.
That's correct. Well, actually, that's not quite accurate. She was cleared by her own physician for everything. Dr. Schwartz, the agency's physician, chief medical officer, wrote, I have not cleared her to carry a gun or to engage in aggressive enforcement activity, and I want to know if her own doctor has done that. He did not say, I've failed to clear her. He was merely asking a question. Now, in the removal from the agency, Yvonne Connors, who was head of the Employee Assistance Program, to whom Harris turned for assistance, sent her an application for disability retirement, which Ms. Harris ignored. She did not fill it out. She did not send it in because she hadn't planned to retire from the agency. She'd never discussed the issue with Ms. Connor. Ms. Connor then sent her another one, which was completely filled out with a tab on it that said, sign here, and a cover letter that said, return this by express mail. There was no alternative given. This was an ultimatum. This was after Ms. Connor had been out of on sick leave, on various kinds of leave, for approximately 5 to 6 months.
What reason would you point to show that these actions, whether it's this disability form or the no duties, were linked to her race or her sex? What's your evidence in the record that you would most rely on for that?
What I would most rely on was the problems that she had had with Joseph Vanacora, who before she had been on leave even a month, went to his supervisor, Mr. Morgan, and asked him to remove Harris from her position. And
why do we think that's because he was either a racist or a sexist?
Well, there was a case, the Probst case, which is mentioned in our brief, which indicates that this same individual, Mr. Vanacora, had been held by the district court here to have retaliated against a white agent for merely supporting the claim of a black agent of discrimination, and that the atmosphere, the general atmosphere itself, was a hostile environment. Just before she came to the agency, someone hung a black doll, a black naked doll, in the agency. There were rumors that there would be an insurrection if a black woman came to head that particular office. I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stewart. Mr. Fluger?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. What this case demonstrates is that the events that eventually led to the retirement of Elaine Harris were unfortunate. By all accounts, she was an accomplished and dedicated public servant. She rose up at the DEA to a position of substantial authority. But it also comes as no surprise that a DEA agent's position is extremely stressful. And if you couple that stress with mental illness, it can have unfortunate results. And that's the case in this case that's before the court.
Well, let me ask you this question. At the time that she was removed from the position as resident in charge, what other options were given to her or offered to her?
When she was removed from the position of resident agent in charge, which was in approximately, I believe, March or so of 1997, it was kind of a fluid situation. What had happened was she came back to work in mid-January without clearance from the DEA personnel. When the DEA personnel in Washington found out there was no clearance, they put her on limited. They directed Chicago to put her on limited duty. Joe Vanacore then put her on limited duty. And as this unfolded, Mr. Vanacore offered alternatives to Ms. Harris. Ms. Harris indicated she did not want to go into the Merrillville office on limited duty because she thought that would be humiliating. It was a very small office, and she thought as being there was very little she could do on limited duty.
So that was one alternative.
That one alternative was go to Merrillville. Another alternative was to come to Chicago in a position that Mr. Vanacore offered her. He said, come to Chicago. It's a bigger office. We have opportunities for you to work in limited duty here. She didn't want to do that because she had it in her mind that they were trying to just get her out of the Merrillville office and were never going to send her back. And that's her own testimony, although there's no indication other than Ms. Harris' testimony that anybody had that plan for her whatsoever. Another alternative, and an alternative that her own physician suggested when he wrote a letter to the DEA in early February, was for her to seek a transfer to Washington, D.C. During her extended mental health leave, she'd worked closely with Yvonne Connors, who was the head of the employee assistance program and was headquartered in Washington. Her physician suggested that maybe if she moved to Washington, maybe on a temporary basis, it could help her healing process. The DEA informed Ms. Harris, that's outside of your region. We can't do it on a temporary basis. However, you can do it if you simply apply for a position in Washington or you submit an application for a medical hardship transfer. So there was another alternative. Ms. Harris, for whatever reason, didn't pursue either one of them, even though her own physician suggested maybe this is something she should do. So there were numerous alternatives available to Ms. Harris. Unfortunately, I think the record supports the conclusion that her own judgment was clouded. Her own judgment was clouded not by as a result of discrimination, it was clouded as a result of the mental illness that she was struggling with and she was getting treatment for. The record also shows that the DEA was willing to continue working with her and for a series of events and a series of misjudgments by Ms. Harris, she concluded that she couldn't do that.
Well, at what point did the DEA send her this application for disability retirement all filled out with the little sign here tab?
It's unclear when the first application was mailed to her. I believe the record indicates that the second application was mailed in either June or July of 1997. And the only reason we know it's the second application is because the cover letter indicates something to the effect of, I didn't receive a response to the last package, so I took the liberty of putting another one together.
And then, so I can have this in sequence, when does Vanacore offer her these different options as it relates to those two applications?
Late January and through the month of February.
Of
1997. She came back. She went on extended medical leave in September of 96. She came back to work January 13th of 97. She was informed she had to go on limited duty on January 23rd. And then the week following that, Vanacore came up with various suggestions about how she could handle the limited duty period while they tried to get the record or the final approval from the DEA personnel office. With respect to the idea that there's no evidence that the materials were ever submitted to an outside contractor, Ms. Harris herself stated in her affidavit that she was told February 7th that part of the holdup is that her file had been submitted to an outside contractor. Yvonne Connors testified in her deposition that, in fact, the file had been submitted to an outside contractor. That's all we ever learned about it because this was never an issue in the trial court.
It sounds like there was an interrogatory saying, who was it? Why wouldn't that? Is there no such interrogatory?
I believe there was an interrogatory asking for all personnel who have reviewed the records. We submitted a response. We did not identify any outside contractor. I worked through agency counsel. I can't explain why no outside contractor was identified, because at her deposition, Yvonne Connor testified as to who the outside contractor was.
So that's actually in the record someplace then?
It's in Yvonne Connor's deposition transcript. And it's not going to be in the record of the trial court, because it was never an issue in the trial court. Nobody ever questioned why this wasn't brought up before. The first time it came up was on appeal, so we do not argue that this issue is waived. There's also an issue as to whether or not Ms. Connor was entitled, or Ms. Harris was entitled to hours from the donated leave bank. I think it's pretty undisputed that the leave bank was simply following its policy to deny or at least hold in abeyance claims for leave pending an outcome on decision for a workers' compensation application. The application did not have to be actually submitted until that regulation came into effect. It was clear that she was considering it and was actually actively working on putting that package together at the time that the further leave was denied. Counsel in her brief also raised the issue that Judge Leinweber failed to address the retaliation issue, but because she can't make a showing that she was constructively discharged or had any other sort of adverse job action, she can't prevail on a retaliation claim either.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Stewart?
Thank you, Your Honor. If the records had been sent to an outside contractor, there would have been a cover memo. There would have been some indication that the file had been sent out of the office to someplace else. Now, she was cleared to return to duty. That is, I want to emphasize that fact. She was cleared by two doctors. The only issue was the nature of that clearance. In fact, she did go back to work and worked for 2 weeks without incident before she was removed from all of her duties. Her mental illness was, in fact, exacerbated by the agency's treatment of her. She was waiting for that outside report, which never came, which never existed. Aretha Fullmore told her that there were no positions in Washington, D.C. that she could fill. So, again, there's nothing but the statements of the individuals that these options were given to her. For those reasons, Your Honor, I would like to request that the lower court be reversed and this matter be remanded. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Stewart. Thank